Good evening. Welcome to Voice of the Voiceless. This is your host, Bronwyn Franklin. And I'm coming to you tonight with, as usual, something a little controversial, a little not mainstream news, things that people just don't want to talk about or don't talk about. So you never know how people are affected by it or what's really going on inside somebody's life. We really don't know. So I'm going to start off with, lately I got a little part-time job because I was having trouble making ends meet. I lost my rental property in a fire. Well, it's not completely destroyed. I just haven't had the money to repair it. I can't afford to repair it. And it wasn't completely destroyed, but the damage is well over $60,000 worth of damages in today's COVID market, which is double what it would have been pre-COVID. So anyway, I took a part-time job, so I've been working. And it's definitely hard to get good staff. It's hard to keep employees. Pay rate is small, you know, and I was hired as cashier, and then I was bumped up to assistant manager. But over and all, I'm doing the work of three people. I'm not only doing cashier, I'm doing stock, I'm doing what we call recovery, which is like cleanup. There used to be a crew to do that, that did that. That no longer exists. So I hear people come in there and they complain about the lines being long, and basically there's only ever two of us cashiers in the store, a manager and a cashier. It's only ever two of us most days after 12 o'clock. And I hear people complaining and whining and crying and just totally just rude and disrespectful. Even though we're cleaning up behind their lazy, trifling behinds, where they just put things on the shelves because they decided they didn't want it on the other side of the store, whether it's food items, frozen food items. You know, I mean, the other day I found some pizza stuck in somewhere, and I'm like, oh my God, how long has this frozen pizza been stuck here? But anyway, but I look at it, and I was looking for another part-time job because this job will not give me full-time hours. But as I've been looking, and I'm not sure if I've talked about this before or not, but I have a felony conviction. I was convicted in 1999 for a crime that I committed in 1997. It is the only felony on my record. At this point, I don't even have traffic violations. Prior to that, the judge even said prior to that, I didn't have any traffic violations, you know, so I'm not a criminal. You know, there was a bad choice, a bad mistake, and I paid for it, but I'm still paying for it. That was in 1999. I did prison time. I did 8.5 years. I was locked up in March of 1999. And I wasn't released until February 2007. Since then, I have worked consistently, had a job of some sort. Came home cleaning offices. Then I went into the mental health field as a peer support specialist, which I have been a peer support specialist ever since. I've done peer support specialist work in Michigan, Portland, and Washington State. I have also went back to school and obtained a bachelor's degree in healthcare administration. However, none of that comes up in a background check. The only thing comes up in the background check is in 1999, Bronwyn Franklin was convicted of assault with intent to commit murder and was sentenced to prison. Immediately, I'm denied the job. This is the shit I'm talking about. There are 80 million Americans, human beings, Americans in the country of America who have felony backgrounds, who struggle getting housing, getting jobs, even going to college. That bachelor's degree that I talked about, when I applied for the Christian University in Portland, Oregon, because they were Christian, and I figured I am a Christian and they have the same values that I have, they denied me. And I had to advocate. I had to write letters. I had to send in paperwork. My boss had to write a letter of recommendation. And during that time, that once I was allowed into the college, and because my basic thing is this, and this is what I said to them, you call yourself a Christian university. However, Christ says, judge not lest ye be judged. He said, he without the first sin cast, without sin cast the first stone. He said, if you visit a prisoner or you fed someone or you gave shelter to someone, you've done it unto the least of me. So if Christ is saying we're supposed to do this for our brothers and sisters who are down and out or struggling, then how do you call yourself a Christian university? Because Christian means being Christ-like, you know, and it goes back to the term of the 80s and the 90s or whenever it was. What would Christ do? What would Jesus do? That's what it was. WWJD. What would Jesus do? You know, we are so far away from that concept, and there's so many of us calling ourselves Christians, but we are so far away from what would Jesus do. He ate with the sinners. He ate with the harlots. He ministered to them. He loved on them. So eventually, I can say I got into the college. Yeah, I even made the dean's list. I kept a pretty high grade point average, and I got my degree in 2016. But it wasn't for the like of being denied. Also, when I lived in the Portland area, that was something else I ran against, housing, because of my conviction. There's a clause that they put on the bottom of the lease that if you've ever been convicted of a felony, there's no time limit. It doesn't say, well, if you've been convicted in the last 5 years, the last 20 years, the last 50 years. It says ever. E-V-E-R. Ever. If you've ever been convicted, you're denied housing. People change. Young people do stupid stuff because it's already been determined. Well, it's not already been determined, but it's part of what's being studied now, science, and looked at now, that they're calling it juvenile brain justice. So they're looking at all these young children that may have committed a murder before the age of 18, 19. And they're basically saying, and it's been overturned and all the way up to the Supreme Court, that you can't sentence these young folks under 18 to life because the brain is not fully developed until approximately the age of 24. So they are having challenges, you know, cognitive challenges with reasoning and understanding and consequences and so forth and so on. You know, and then that brings me to another thing. Why is it you say The science is saying the age of 24, but the law is saying the age of 18. So what happens to those young people who committed crimes between the ages of 18 and 24? You know, there used to be a time where you couldn't buy alcohol or cigarettes until you were 21. You know, there used to be laws that said you couldn't even receive your inheritance until you were 24. And all of that was because our forefathers or mothers or cousins or sisters, our ancestors knew back then judgment is impaired until mid-20s, period. So you got all of these young folks walking around who made stupid ass crimes. Because for one, we're not teaching our children about emotional intelligence. They're not understanding how to handle their frustrations, their anger. They're not being taught how to release these outlets, these things, how to process them. They're not being taught. So they want to pick up a gun and they want to shoot. They want to rob because they feel entitled. It's just so many things, but this is still not about what I want to talk about. But they're affected by what I want to talk about. 80 million humans in America have felonies, and this causes them to have barriers to basic life sustainability. Work to provide, housing to provide. There's very few states that hinder fellas from voting, but this has been a lie that's been told throughout, I don't know how long, that if you have a felony, you do not have a right to vote. That's not true in all states. In very few states, it's true. People need to get educated and take a look. What it is if you are inside a prison institution and you are a ward of a state or federal institution, you don't have the right to vote. But once you are outside, and especially here that I know of in Michigan, you can vote. I voted in Michigan, I voted in Portland, and I have voted in Portland, Oregon, and in Washington State. And I have that felony. It didn't block my voting rights. It affected my housing. It affected my education. It affected my job. I could not get jobs. I've had the hardest time with that here in Michigan. Because when I was doing peer support and I was in mental health, peer support is basically working with people and supporting people because I have lived experience. And because of my lived experience with my mental health and with my incarceration, my imprisonment, that qualified me to work as a peer support specialist. So Portland had to re-look at some of their policies. And yeah, when I got there, I had to fight. I was brought there for a job. Company paid for me to get there. But then the state said no. So I had to fight. I had to advocate. I had to show what I had done for 5 years. Presentations, public speaking, all of those different things that I had done that qualified me to be a professional on the other side of a felony conviction. And that opened a door to peer supports being looked at in a different way and taken on a case-by-case basis. More people with felonies were able to get the jobs. And we did the jobs and we were successful at it and we saved lives. We helped people change their lives. We helped people understand how to process differently, you know, but we still had those barriers of housing and education and employment. I spent 8 years in the Pacific Northwest, you know, and by the time I left there, there was roles open for those who had felony convictions. I know one gentleman, he had 25 felonies on his record, and he was a successful forensic peer support, peer wellness specialist in the Pacific Northwest. Matter of fact, I trained him. I was one of his trainers. Awesome guy. So when I moved back to Michigan 2 years ago, I knew this was a new beginning. I knew it was time to start my business. I didn't have any clue that my house would have a fire, because that was a source of my income while I built my business, 313 Network Solutions. But then there was a fire, and I still have bills and car notes and things to pay. So I took the job that I have now. Yes. It's not what I'm used to. I'm used to an office job, sitting around, paper pushing, training, teaching, educating, presenting, you know, and advocating, making and helping people grow and save lives. But I needed income, and I needed one other thing, because COVID had taken that away, is I needed human connection. I needed to be able to physically feel the energy of people, because Zoom was not doing it. Yes, I was seeing people, but the energy transference was missing. And I am an empathic healer, you know, and I'm growing and I'm learning more and more about that gift as I move forward. So that energy is important to me. But meanwhile, while I'm looking for other jobs, better paying jobs, or other part-time jobs, I've ran into what I have ran into so many times. Freaking Home Depot. They denied me because of my felony. DoorDash. They denied me because of my felony. In Portland, I worked Lyft for 18 months before they came back and found the felony, and then they kicked me off because the city of Portland has an ordinance, a policy in their Department of Transportation that excludes people with felony backgrounds from. So if I wanted to drive a bus in the city of Portland, I could not. Then I applied for online insurance representative doing remote work as an online insurance representative. I was freaking denied. That was here in Michigan because of my felony. Because the state of Michigan won't allow me to have an insurance salesperson's license because of my felony. We're talking about a felony conviction from 1999. That was 23 damn years ago. The crime happened 25 years ago. I've been out of prison over 15 years. And I don't have a damn traffic ticket. Not a speeding ticket, not a jaywalking ticket. Not a running or stop sign, a red light. No, none of this. And there's over 80 million human beings out there like me that's going through the same shit. And what I look at is, and I probably haven't talked about it here, but I talked about it on some other presentations, especially around prison and mental illness and how many prisoners are in prison that have mental health challenges. And in some of these statistics I've talked about is, if you look at the majority of the people in our prison systems, they're Black and brown people. They are people of color. So that takes me to this piece right here. Not only is it post-conviction poverty that we are forced into because we committed a felony, this is a new part of the Jim Crow. Because when the 13th Amendment was written, the 13th Amendment said men are free except for if they are imprisoned. So prison became the new slavery. Okay? And Jim Crow was a way of separating privilege, class, privilege, race from Black and brown, unprivileged races. Jim Crow and segregation went hand in hand. We are living in America in 2022, where Jim Crow segregation and post-conviction poverty is plaguing our Black and our brown people. It is devastating to families, people who are not able to feed their children or house their children. Many are getting state assistance, and many are houseless or become houseless. My heart goes out to women who come home from a prison situation and have children that they need to care for. And they can't find work. They can't find housing. They go back to school and better themselves and get a degree, but they still can't find jobs. They still can't find housing. People coming home, come home with the lack of help, hope. Because we already know that there are so many barriers and so many obstacles to try to overcome. And when I say try, because many of them you aren't able to overcome. You know, that you will live in substandard housing. You will work minimum wage, petty jobs, which is new slave labor. you know, because there's no regulations, because we did away with unions who asked for certain standards of quality of life. You know, I mean, I looked at, there was a time people would run to the factory. And I looked at jobs at Ford Motor Company, and they're starting off at like $17 an hour. You can start off at $16 an hour at Home Depot. I'm not sure what the benefit package looks like, but come on now. But if you got a felony, and when I interviewed for the Home Depot job, I let them know that I had a felony. And she said they do case by case. Case by case. I got one charge. I got one case. One felony. One conviction. And I got denied. A while back, I applied for a peer support research position with the University of Michigan. And the same thing happened. Because the University of Michigan has some sort of policy that doesn't allow me to work there. And from the way it looked in the paperwork, and I don't know where they got these old weird dates from, that I wouldn't be eligible till sometime in 2025. So if it's established on conviction date, 25 years should be 2024, because conviction was 1999. If it was based on the actual offense date, which was 1997, then it should be 2023, will be 25 years. If it was based on release from prison, that makes it 18 years. No one has been able to return my emails or my phone calls so that I can look at the policy and see where they're getting this information from and how they're coming up with these dates. And with the age of technology today, you're getting a lot of voicemails, you're getting a lot of runaround, you never get a human person. It's all automated. So in the last less than 8 months, I've been at 3 freaking jobs here in the state of Michigan because of a conviction in 1999. It's bull. Complete, utterly crap. The system is set up for you to fail. The average person, not the average person, but many people, they come out and they hit these barriers, they hit these roadblocks, and they commit a new crime. Sometimes they're caught. Sometimes they continue to go on and commit crime after crime after crime until they are caught and sent back. You know? Many of them come back and they have no hope, and they come back to the hopelessness and even fall back into their addiction, you know, because they're numbing out the pain, they're numbing out the trauma, they're numbing out the hopelessness. There are several organizations out here, and I'm going to see what they're doing. You know, I don't know. I'm going to look into them and see what kind of things that they're working on and what kind of legislations and how can we overturn some of this stuff for our people. You know, like I say, it's post-conviction poverty. And it's definitely a part of the new Jim Crow. How is it me, a black woman, an intelligent black woman, a black woman with a college degree, a bachelor's degree, with a 15-year work history, can't get a job? I'm honest. I'm a hardworking person. How is it I can't get a job? I have been blessed here in Michigan to have housing, and that was another reason why I came back to Michigan, because the rent was so expensive and I could not get my money together to buy a house in the Pacific Northwest. And I knew that I could not sustain the rental rates that I was paying without working three jobs. I knew that I could move back to Michigan because I still owned a house here. And how I owned that house was when I came home from prison, my mother had passed away and I had a small inheritance, not a large one. It was small. But the first thing I did, well, not the first thing I did, the second thing I did when I got my hands on that money was buy a house. The first thing I did was buy a good used car. Because I knew I had already conditioned my mindset to know that getting a job was going to be hard. And if I got one, it was going to be in suburbia. And I needed reliable transportation to get there. I also got an auto mechanics engine repair license with the state of Michigan because I knew that getting a job was going to be hard. So push come to shove, I would start rebuilding engines and repairing engines on cars to make a living. I already knew, so I had planned for it. And also, housing. I bought a house because I knew that I needed a roof over my head, and I didn't need it where somebody was going to be convicting me. And I was going to be living in substandard conditions where it was dilapidated, falling apart, and I couldn't get any response from my landlord. I had did that, been there, done that. I had not lived like that since I was 26 years old. I bought my first house at 26 because I got tired of the slum lords. So I knew when I moved back to Michigan, that piece would disappear, that rental piece would disappear, that rent rates and stuff, because I had a housing. And then after I moved back, unfortunately, I moved in with my dad, and he passed away. I moved in with him to take care of him, and that wasn't unfortunate. That was the best, that was the reason to come back, is to spend time to love my dad. And he passed away. So I'm still living here in his house. And his house is paid for. He paid for it with cash, no mortgage. So my house is paid for with no mortgage. So I have two houses that I'm sitting here with. One is damaged because of the fire, which was my income. And then the one that I reside in. Men, if you hear him in the background, me and my big old pit bull, named Kush, you know. But that was intentional planning before I came out of prison. That was divine intervention from God and my ancestors to have the money to buy the house. And divine intervention from God and my ancestors to be in this house. But I still need to be able to take care of myself. The light bill, the water bill, the heat bill, gas in my car, food, clothes. How do I sustain basic life? How do I sustain those things without employment, without a job? You can. And I hear people complaining in the store all the time. It's like, there's jobs out here. People just don't want them. People don't want to work. True and not true. Yes, there's jobs out here. Yes, some people don't want to work. Yes, there's jobs out here. But then there's some people who cannot get these jobs because they have a felony background, such as myself. Like I said, three jobs. And this is only mid-August. So it's not from the lack of trying or looking. It's because I have a felony. How many more of these 80 million Americans are experiencing what I'm experiencing? How do we change this shit? Where is the equity? Where is the diversity? Where is the inclusion in these workplaces for people who have blemishes on their background? I don't know the answers. I got to figure out how to fight because that's what I do. I advocate, and I advocate for myself, you know, and I speak loud and I speak proud. So what I did the last couple of days, which was my off days, was I took all my certificates off the wall and I copied them and I scanned them. And I made a PDF with every degree I have. Yes, because I have my associates, I have my bachelor's, every certification of peer support training, which that's, I have three of those because I trained as peer support and peer wellness and peer youth counselor in three separate states. I've done child and family counseling. I've done wraparound counseling. I am an ordained minister. I'm trained in ECPR, which is emotional CPR. I'm trained in several NAMI, in three different NAMI programs. There's some other trainings that I got. I don't know where the certificates are. As I'm sitting here naming them off, I can think of at least another training where I'm, there was two trainings that I'm a master trainer in, a master trainer. So that means I can train trainers. So I got all of this, and all of this I did since I've been home from prison in 15 years. I literally took my certificates and put them around the border of a room. And I covered two walls with certificates and degree and my degrees. So I took them all down, took them all out the frame. And so the first place I sent them off to was Checker. Checker is the background place that does backgrounds for DoorDash and Lyft and all those other different things. And they were the first organization that says, give me an opportunity to explain or talk about or cover what had occurred and what I've done. So I went in there and I did explain, you know, hey, this is re-traumatizing to have to tell this story, to talk about what happened or why it happened, blah, 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 blah. Because it is. You just, everything that I'm trying to move past, you just made me go back to the past and open up. And that's a re-traumatization, you know, because I got to go through all of those emotions, all those feelings and all those things that I'm trying to heal from. And then I talked about what I've done for the last 15 years, and I uploaded that PDF with about, I want to guess it's about 30 pages. I really haven't looked at it to see how many pages is in it. But then, yeah, I uploaded it. You know, I uploaded it to their site, and my next step is to take them. And it's 26 pages. Like I said, I know for a fact I'm missing at least two more. So my next thing is to write a letter to Home Depot and include that same packet of 26 certificates and awards and recognition to them as well. I also asked my last boss to write me a reference letter, and I need to write the previous boss I had in Portland as well. Because basically in 15 years, I've had three jobs in mental health, one here in Michigan for 5 years at New Center Community Mental Health Services, and they are no longer in business. And then I had two jobs in Portland, you know, consistent, you know, over 8 years. So basically I got 13 years of employment. The last 2 years have been COVID years. So it's been kind of wishy-washy. But then I've been at the job I'm at now, 8 months, you know. So I have taken all of that. So reach out. Reach out to your legislators. Reach out to your lawmakers. Reach out to me if you need be. Because this is just ridiculous. This many people still living in poverty because they can't sustain life because they have a felony conviction. It's just bull. It's total bull. It's total bull. You know, I am totally tired of it. You know, it's frustrating. It's totally, totally frustrating. You know, how do we feed the babies? I am fortunate that I don't have small children. I am truly grateful that I don't have to worry about feeding my babies. But sometimes I have to worry about, okay, I got to buy dog food. I got to buy soap. I have to put gas in the car. You know, I need laundry detergent. My water bill is overdue. You know, my electric bill is overdue. You know. How do I get out of this hole? And the hole just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. you know, and I don't know if I talked about it on another podcast or not, you know, but what I, but I talked about the crabs in the barrel, you know, and they're crabs in the barrel and they study pulling each other down because they're trying to crawl out of the barrel, you know. Well, this is a barrel, you know, and there's 80 million human beings with felony convictions in this barrel. And we're all trying to crawl out of it. How do we get out? How do we get out and not pull each other down? How do we get out of this stuck pattern? How do we move away from being in a place of just totally numbing out? You know, I'm working on a presentation around called Resetting Your Mindset as it relates to reentering society as a returning citizen. And I talk about developing a different mindset and developing a mindset that includes having peace as well as having purpose. Because when we develop the mindset of having peace and purpose, we can find hope. There's hope when you have purpose. There's faith when you have peace. There's hope when you have peace. And then the next thing I wanted to talk about is building a tribe of positive supports and role models. Because if we are in this barrel, how do we get out? We need positive supports and role models. We need a tribe. We need a village. You know, we need non-judgmental support, encouragement. I know two people right now, two people very close to me, that did lengthy prison sentences, 12, 13 plus almost 30 years between, you know, and between the two of them. I mean, they grew up there. They went in as young men, you know, 18, 19, 20, 22. And they grew up in prisons and they're still stuck. In that institutionalized behaviors of isolation, protective mode, and then not being able to get jobs or housing, you know. And it's been 7, 8, 9, 10 years later, 20 years later, and they're still stuck right there in that institutional mindset. You know, trying to do the right thing, but fear. Of crossing the boundaries that were set in those prison settings, even though it might be the right thing to do, even getting a driver's license because of fear. Even a fear of being out after 5 o'clock. And I've experienced it myself. I've had days when I come home, and I'm in the house before 5 o'clock or before dark, and I don't want to be out after dark because I spent so many years inside prison, not being able to go outside in the dark. How crazy is that? But we're stuck. And the third piece of this presentation that I'm trying to put together is reframing skills that we used, or those that may have used in their criminal life, and making them job qualifications. You know, example, you know, all these drug dealers out here, and they doing everything they're using weights and grams and this, that, and the other, and they can count money and count this and count that. Okay. That's a job. That's a skill. Everybody can't do it. How do you relate that to an employment? Me, I was a tutor when I was in the prison system. I had to market those skills in a way that showed that I could help people learn. I could teach. And I came home and I've been doing trainings and presentations because I recognize that's a gift that I have. So we can change that stuck mentality and reset our mentality, our mindset, and learn these things and build these things, but we still have so many laws that are hindering us from getting jobs, so many policies. And that's part of what I want 313 Network Solutions to do, is to help advocate to change some of that, or help people learn how to advocate for themselves. I want to help people learn how to be self-aware and develop those the mindsets that help them find their peace, their purpose, give them hope. Because today, as I sit here, and I've been denied three different things. DoorDash, really? Come on. Insurance job, so that's four jobs. University of Michigan, Home Depot, the insurance, and then DoorDash. That's four in 8 months. And three of them have been within the last less than 90 days. I still have hope. I still have faith. And I know I have purpose. And because of my self-awareness, I will continue to advocate for myself and others. That's who I am. That's what I do. And I want to continue to support and uplift and help pull as many of these 80 million people as I can out of that barrel of being stuck in the cycle of post-conviction poverty. Help us get rid of the new Jim Crow. Because this is the shit I'm talking about. You know, this is why I do what I do. Because it has impacted my life in so many ways. It's hard enough being Black. It's hard and freaking enough being a woman. They just overturned Roe versus Wade. Come on, give me a break. You just took away women's rights again? Come on. assholes. I have 5 strikes against me. I was born with 2. I was born black and I was born female. That was 2 strikes against me the day I was born. I have a mental health diagnosis. 3rd strike. 4th strike. I have a felony. Now I have a 5th strike. I'm a senior citizen. So I have 5 strikes going against me on a daily basis. I've had to be strong. I've had to fight. I had to push forward. But the way I had to do that was I had to find my peace and my purpose. And I had to advocate for myself. I had to learn to turn from that passive aggressive behavior that I had and use it to become more assertive. But first I had to recognize what it was I needed. And then I had to ask for it. So, again, this is Bronwyn Franklin coming to you from 313 Network Solutions. Speaking to you live on the podcast, Voice to the Voiceless. Here we give a voice to those who have not had a voice. Tonight I dedicate this to the 80 million human beings who are living with post-conviction poverty in America today. Thank you for joining me. Have a good night.